Good afternoon. It is time for In Your Own Words with Dr. Godwin Orke. How are you, Dr. Orke, in your own words?
I'm doing great.
Very good.
Excellent, beautiful day.
Wonderful. Well, it's a good time for your show. I'm sure you've got a lot to share with us, a lot to talk about. Thank you for being with us on the Intentional Talk Radio Network. And remember, folks, you can get us on all of your podcast platforms right here, itrnradio.com. That's on Pandora, Amazon, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Black Talk Radio Network, and so many more. So be right here with Dr. Godwin Orke. Dr. Godwin Orke, it's on you.
Thank you very much, Miss Williams. And just this morning, I was looking over some notes. And the issue of the Tokyo Olympics just came up on my radar. And I asked myself just that singular question. If I were the advisor to President Joe Biden, what will I tell him right now? And I said, I was going to say, dear Mr. President, I'm stressed. And I'm not even at the Olympics. Just thinking of the Olympics, I'm already stressed. How much more those amazing athletes who are there in Tokyo right now. I can just imagine doing all their feats in an empty stadium. What has happened to all the pomps and circumstances? This is the 2020 Olympic, it is 2021 because of the pandemic. Should we have continued or not? Could we have just canceled it and just bite the bullet? Those were my thoughts. And I said, okay, write the memo to the president and just write only one page. And I continued my memo to the president by saying, I am so glad Miss Simone Biles brought the issue of mental health to the fore. When she said she's not feeling it. She placed mental health at the same level as her physical health, her well-being. Mm-hmm. She viewed mental health as just another part of her body that needed to be taken care of. She's the greatest of all time. So she's bold enough right now to be able to speak and navigate the system. Perhaps she will not be available. She'll be too old for the next Olympics in 3 or so years' time. But you can see she was able to speak. But this was different from the tennis star during the French Open when she said, you know what, I can play, but I cannot deal with the questions from the journalists just right after a game because they prod, they prompt, and they wait for her to trip on her words. And I remember when she said that, how she was bullied after that by saying, oh, but you signed for this. No, she didn't sign to be abused. But also, comparing the two athletes, I can see what Simone Biles has done is way up here because she had the right words, she had the right countenance, and she had all the amazing support. She was her own champion, her own advocate. That is why in today's show, we have a guest that is slightly different from all our other guests. We have somebody I've known for almost 20 years, but who has navigated the healthcare system as a consumer, as the patient. Oftentimes when we are here, I come with fellow practitioners and they speak at us, really. But now let's talk about the person from the other side. Then we cannot dive in into exactly who is the advocate, what is patient advocacy as against navigator. What are the differences, and how could we better use these services, especially now when the issue of information, trust, and disinformation is on the fore? Just waking up in the morning in a beautiful day, there are more things to stress you out by all the goings on than to calm you. So without much further ado, I would like to present my guest today, Miss Prince, that I said I've known for 20 years. And at times, jokingly, I call her the bionic woman. Because if there's a diagnosis from head all the way to foot, she has it. And she has gone through all the doctors, through trial and errors, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And well, she's still here, and she remains a champion for other people right now. Her mission is to help others when they have concerns, so at least to listen to her. You better don't travel with her, because her carry-on suitcase will probably contain 50 different kinds of pills. Yes, but she's not allowing that to weigh her down. Our own ministry is to partner with educators like myself to say, okay, now this is my story. So in your own words, Ms. Prince, I'd like to give you the floor.
Oh, good evening, everybody. I was just having a conversation with some people just a minute ago about healthcare. And about my situation just in this past year, because we got put on lockdown in 2020, I was scheduled for a couple of procedures to take place, major procedures, mind you. And we got locked down. But in, I believe, June of last year, it opened back up. So my doctors rushed to do a procedure. Jump in here, let me do this real fast and get you up out of here. But in the process of them doing it really fast, I was damaged even more, where I almost had a heart attack, where they had to call in a crash cart the day after behind a small medication, which some people are looking at as nothing, milk of magnesia. Who thinks milk of magnesia can kill you? I didn't know. But because I had a surgery, they need you to use the restroom. So they kept feeding me milk of magnesia, which lowered my potassium, which I was just talking to a nurse. I promise you, not 30 seconds later, I was pushing a panic button and they were running it. I could not breathe. The next day, I see my doctor. Hey, doc, what happened? Well, she said, well, you almost had a heart attack because your potassium was low. I said, but you ordered the milk of magnesia. It wasn't my fault. It was your fault. So now I need to go home. Now, 2 months later, let's do another procedure on you, Miss Prince. You have gallstones. Let me take your gallbladder out. Okay. I don't know this doctor from Adam. He's a specialist. Hey, I got you, Ms. Prince. Okay, I go in to have the procedure. Oh, well, you went through that real good, Ms. Prince. Go on ahead and go home. You mean the same day? Yes, Ms. Prince, go home. I go home. Any follow-up? No. 2 months later, I'm calling my gastroenterologist. I'm like, something's not right. Now, who knows my body better than me? Something's just not right. I got bulges. I got scars. I'm hurting. But I'm using the bathroom everywhere I go. Something's wrong. He sends me in, hey, let's give her an endoscopy. This is more money, insurance. Hey, let's get the money. Now I go in there. This is an outpatient thing. Who actually gets admitted afterwards because something went wrong? Oh, Miss Prince, well, your pressure went up too much. They gave you too much anesthesia. Now, how many times y'all going to give me the Michael Jackson cocktail before I get a Michael Jackson and I be in somebody's funeral home? Do we get follow-up? Mm-mm. Let's give you some more medication. Like the orchid said, I have tons of medication. Tons of medication. Here, I take 10 pills in the morning, take 3 in the afternoon, take 12 more at night. Oh, this, you got anxiety? Oh, you depressed? Oh, now I don't have a gallbladder. I had a full hysterectomy. Now, did anybody give me something to put back that estrogen back in my body? I don't have that. I don't know what's going on. Oh, as soon as you get this surgery, Miss Prince, you're going to lose all type of weight. Mind you, I done gained 50 pounds. I can't even eat. I go days without eating, but I look like I can eat a horse. Look like I ate a horse. But here we are. I got Medicare, Medi-Cal. I got good insurance, good coverage. They want to hurry up and see you, but they don't do the follow-up. And that's what the problem is, the follow-up. I just lost my dad a month ago from lack of care. He went in, he bumped his head. Oh, you got a brain bleed, Mr. Prince. Let's do brain surgery. Okay. 4 days later, let's send you to the rehab center. While you got staples in your head and supposed to be wearing a helmet, we're going to send you to the rehab in the middle of the night where you're not coherent. So the next day I go and see him. He done made a mess in the bathroom because ain't nobody took him to the bathroom. He don't got no helmet on. I go home because he live in Vegas. I live here. The next day, he falls and bumps his head again. Oh, he's okay. Oh, no, he's not. Let's give him a second brain surgery. Oops, let's give him some medication. Oops, now we got pneumonia. Oh, let's put him on a ventilator. Okay, Sunday, let's take him off the ventilator. Oops, let's put the ventilator back in on Sunday because he ain't breathing. Oh, let's take it out on Monday. Oh, no, he still ain't breathing. Let's put it back in on Monday. Oh, we're going to do surgery on Wednesday. Well, my daddy died that Monday. The place where he was at was beautiful. It looked like the Rolls Royce of rehab centers. I'm talking about glass and bling everywhere. But it ran like a broke down Pinto. So you got these doctors out here, and they tell you they care about you, and I'm doing this in your best interest, and it's not.
Yeah, that brief intro, because I think it just ties in straight to what we want to talk about, your rights. Who assists really the caregiver? Because for the healthcare providers and practitioners, all of them went to school to learn to provide this service. But there's no school we go to learn to be patient. We don't know what to do. And I like how you built your narration, because in the last year, when we had the lockdown because of the COVID, it did not mean life was not going on. There were people that still had several appointments and conditions that still required care. There was no pause to the person receiving chemo or radio, or even either had to go for my biopsy. However, the unintended consequences will include the fact that we had delays in everything we wanted to do, and oftentimes leading to complications. And as you know, when we discuss issues of equity and healthcare, disparity in healthcare, the way a person of color is treated in the emergency room is almost invariably different from the way a white person will be treated in the emergency room. both of them will cry of the same level of pain. And one may be told, oh, you are overreacting. You are just a drama queen. While the other, with the same level of pain, which we know is very subjective, will probably get pain relief. So who advocates, who encourages, who teaches people what they should know? I didn't say fight, but what they should know in navigating the system. There's a class I teach, graduate level class on patient advocates. And, you know, this is an area of specialization in healthcare concerned with advocacy for patients, survivors, and caregivers. It's that unit where we give people opportunity to speak, to air their own opinion and grievances. So that means a patient advocate could be either an individual or an organization. And usually they try to work with the specific groups of disorders. For example, since we are battling this pandemic, and right now we've even upped the stakes by saying, okay, buy 400, get a job and receive $100, just to show the urgency of the moment. Yet people are not taking them up on that offer, because really it's almost as if we've exhausted those that will receive the job. Even for $100 now, people are still not coming up. What is the reason? There is a fundamental reason to this. And of course, it's the age-long issues of disparities that have always been there. But the patient's bill of rights that you all see when you go to the clinic now, those things are not there for fashion. We're always reminded that those clinicians and practitioners actually belong to a trade board, an association, and so subject to the rules and regulations. And it has to be two-way. It's a two-way relationship of trust, of mutual respect. And over-medicating, multi-pharmacy, polypharmacy, it's essentially placing band-aids on rotting wounds, because the wound will still fester underneath. Does it hurt? Yes, take this pill. Does it hurt? Yes, take this pill. Without you being asked about the origin of etiology, how did that pain really start? Or even engaging you in that conversation. I remember growing up back home in Nigeria, and malaria, of course, is endemic and ubiquitous. Every month, you are down with malaria. My mom took me to the clinic to see the doctor once. Almost everybody was sick in the house. It was one of those difficult days. And as she came into the doctor's room, the guy was already prescribing, even before talking to Rod. My mom reached across the table, violated the space, and snatched the pen from him and said, listen to me first. I've not told you. Don't process me as if this is a factory. No, listen to me. I've not complained. What are you already giving me a prescription and telling me to go to the pharmacy for? No, she knew her right. And she demanded her right to be heard. But over here, well, maybe we may not be able to reach across the room and grab the physician by the scruff of his neck, but we should be able to have one-on-one with them. They love us with the good insurance, simply put, because at the end is the bottom line. And when they talk about the utilization rate, it comes with the fact that how many patients can you squeeze in 1 hour? And it's always the bottom line. If you can make maybe 5 minutes per patient, guess what? I'll give you a bonus, because I know what I'll also receive from that. So that gradually you lose the touch and connection. And it is it's not typically the fault of the practitioner because they are also under pressure. And that is it. And also in the issues of care, all the ambulatory care services, they are there now. And that is because that is what the insurance companies are pushing people to. They don't want you to stay. They want the rate of hospitalization to be low, to have the maximum yield. Gone are the days when simple procedures were all done in inpatient care. Now, even to have a colonoscopy, you do all the thing by yourself at home. And you just slide in early in the morning and you've already done your colonic washout and they poke, they check, and they scuttle you home. Gone are the days where you probably spend the night there, rest, be monitored to make sure you don't have any complications. For example, the colonic washout, did it cause an electrolyte imbalance? Did you lose more fluid than you should? How much salt did you use? Nah, you just stay at home, do everything, be dropped off, and go. Now, Miss Prince, what will you say regarding the patient's rights, and what is your own experience?
When it comes to patients' rights, as far as lately, it seems like we don't have rights. We have requests made. We are pretty much demanded to do certain things. I want to turn my camera on just for a half a second because I need Millette to see what you were talking about. And this is way past ridiculous, okay? I'm going to turn my camera on to show you what I am forced to deal with on a day-to-day basis. I don't know if you can see this behind me, this here. This is a case of medication. These are bags of medications that I just received. I mean, bags that have not even been opened.
But what are they for?
Oh, I have so many problems. To list them, you'd have to stay on another hour. But I have congestive heart failure is one. Diagnosed with anxiety, depression, gastritis, acid reflux, lipidemia, edema, hernia, fibroids. I mean, you name it. They said I got high blood pressure, sleep apnea. I mean, it's a slew of things.
You never said no.
You see, I don't, some of these I don't open because I'm not going to do it to myself.
Right. But have you ever said no to the doctors?
Of course. Let's say you to somebody else. So something's wrong with you if you don't agree with me. So now let's go send you to the psych doctor because evidently you don't know as much as I know. Oh, Miss Prince, you suffer from anxiety. You must be depressed. Oh, this is me. Oh, me. Now take it. You can't sleep. Oh, so your brother said this when you were 3? You asked me questions that are not relevant to the person that I am today.
So let me ask this. So the anxiety and depression, they said, so you must be, you didn't tell them anything. They just said that, oh, you must.
They ask you questions about your life in general. So they just assume that anybody that has a problem, oh, you were molested as a child, you have to be depressed. Oh, your father and mother got divorced, you have to be depressed. Oh, you're a single mom, you must be depressed.
So they gave you something for anxiety and depression.
Yes.
And do you take it?
No.
Good. So they gave you something for hormone replacement therapy.
No.
They didn't.
They did not.
Well, that was the only thing it sounds like they've done right. Because hormone replacement therapy is the absolute wrong thing to take. I was on hormone replacement therapy and it gave me a lump. And I had a lumpectomy in 2001. And I was on hormone replacement therapy for 18 years because I started menopause at 32. So the doctor that I had at Kaiser didn't even know that I had a lumpectomy. And when I sent him a message and asked him to call me, we were joking around like nothing had ever happened. I said, Dr. Schwimmer, don't you have my chart on your desk? No. I said, you don't. No. Uh-uh. What's going on? I said, Dr. Schwimmer, you don't have my chart on your desk? No. Dr. Schwimmer, I just had a lumpectomy. You what? I said, yeah, I had a lumpectomy. No, I didn't know. I said, well, remember you and the other five doctors that told me it was a benign lump? It wasn't benign. It was not benign. Oh, my God. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. So I take it with a grain of salt with all of them. Not that you have done something any different. My doctor asked me if I wanted to go on metformin. I told her no. She asked me three times, you want to go on metformin? Because I had an elevated A1C. I said, no, I'll do it myself. She asked me again. She asked me three times. I'm not doing metformin. I don't care how many times you ask me. I'm not doing it. So I sent you a message. I want you to talk to Dr. Zarif, because the pharmaceutical companies and physicians, doctors are practicing on you and me and everybody else like us. We just had a show that it was Mindful Mondays, and she had someone on who is a pastor, and he talked about COVID and the fact that the Black community does not want to take the vaccine. And for him, he says everybody should get the vaccine. He's not a physician. He's not a doctor. He's only a pastor of a church. And he talked about getting the vaccine and who he lost as a result of not getting the vaccine. These are things that we've talked about on this network last year, this year. We have Dr. Orte, who is very well versed in the vaccine and COVID. We have other doctors on who are very well versed in COVID. What we want to hear are things that are going to help us and you, not things that are going to compound issues. So with you and that bag, that trailer full of medication, as far as I'm concerned, that is absolutely horrible. You need to have a class action lawsuit. For you to have that many medications and that many issues after one right after another, you need to have a class action lawsuit. You need to have a commercial on network television. And they would probably say that they're doing this. You're on one medication to alter what the other medication has done, and that's what it sounds like. And Dr. Orke is
you are exactly correct with that, because this is it. You take this medication, then you have some side effect or reaction, and you take then you are prescribed another medication to correct the effect of that one, not change, not replace. Then the second one comes with its own effect, then you are given a third one. So you are using a system of adapters, you know, like just the plug and socket. You change the socket, you change the socket, you change the plug, you change the plug until it's this bulky, when all you should really have done was just remove the first one. And just as you asked whether your charts are there or not, the charts could be there, but what about when the left hand is not talking to the right hand? So they don't even know what is being done. For example, you want to have a myomectomy. You want to have a surgery for your fibroid. And meanwhile, they also know you have a position, maybe some anal gland. Why not have both done at the same time? When the individual is already on the in the operating room, why not have both? They are still in the same general area. Why spread it over time if it is not for profiteering?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And profiteering, the profit is ridiculous. And doctors don't, present company excluded, but doctors don't typically say, how do you feel? Tell me what's going on with you. Because doctors don't expect us to know our bodies as well as one we should or as well as they do. And I've been to Huntington Hospital in Pasadena and they can't find anything. So the next step is anxiety. I think you're suffering from anxiety. One doctor said depression, the other one said anxiety. I think you're suffering from anxiety. Can we have someone come in and talk to you? I just said, sure. Yeah, okay. I talk all the time anyway. Okay, so it didn't bother me. But I think you're suffering from anxiety. We cannot find anything. All of your tests have come back and you're really, really healthy. So we can't find anything. They did give me three medications. They did give me three. I didn't take one. So, and I'm on Medicaid. I'm a senior citizen. So when I go to triage, the first thing they ask me is, what medications are you on? Excuse me? What medications are you on? Do I look like I need medication? What makes you think I'm on medication? Because I'm 68, soon to be 69, I look like I need medication? Wrong again. I don't have any medication. But Ruby, your situation probably shouldn't be. It should not be. And I believe in naturopathic holistic medicine. I have taken the vaccine, but I certainly believe that there are things that we can do for ourselves to keep ourselves healthy, whole, healed, strong. I don't think that we have to. What was that?
I didn't say anything.
Okay.
It's a feedback.
I don't think that we have to rely on contemporary commercial medicine. I don't think that one bit. No, I don't.
Especially when you have those warnings, this can cause this and this can cause that.
Well,
I really don't want to, you're going to give me anxiety when you tell me, take this medicine right here, but it can kill you.
Yes, right.
Yeah, that is why I was looking at a paper today and about fortification of this cereal in adding folic acid and so on and so forth. I was thinking, okay, now this is all again going back to the concept of medication. Why can't you just have your natural folates, your green leafy vegetables, and that will also transmit to the child in utero? Because really what we are trying to do is make sure the neural tube defects don't occur, and they're usually linked to a deficiency in the folic acid. But no, you get another pill. And you add one more pill to it, which means now you are medicating a natural process. When all you really need to do is a healthy choice of the foods. Eat something that is balanced. But now, this is the flip side. I'm sure a lot of us would like to eat something that is healthy and balanced. But do you notice that is what is more expensive in the stores? Go to your grocery store and you see the label organic. The organic spinach versus the regular spinach. Almost $2-3 more for the same handful of it. And that is if you have it in your own zip code. For those of us traveling and living in this southern part of the city, and as we go further south, what do you notice? You see only the liquor store, the tobacco stores, and the same damn loans, the loan sharks. That's what you find. The check cashing places. You don't see any other thing. Then when you are lucky, every corner you are going to find a fast food joint, and not the proper ones. Going to be ones with styrofoams and over processed McDonald's. Not even, you know, the Mexican and Hispanic ladies that will make us that fresh tortillas with pupusas.
That's right.
You
right.
know, no, it's going to be, you know, puffs and Cheetos.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your choices? Now, consider this. If the nearest Whole Foods store involves your taking a bus, you have to really plan your movement. LA is not so friendly for bus transportation if you don't own your own car. You have to plan your movement. But if you can just drive to Taco Bell or McDonald's around the corner or walk there, for $1.50, you can buy dinner for your child.
Right.
Those are the options. Those are the choices. The fruits are not cheap either. We tell them to eat good fruits. So it's a delicate balance beyond us just pointing fingers and telling people about eat healthy and follow the naturopathic remedies and don't take all these additional chemicals into your system. We have to place it in the context of their own lives, how they are living. The closest bus station to me, at least I'm lucky, maybe it's just 3-4 blocks away. But think of a 68 to 75-year-old lady. She can walk that distance, get on the bus. But once she's carrying a trolley after shopping, she can't walk all that distance back home. It's not friendly. It's not convenient. And this is some of the issues that also will discourage people from, should we say, their choices and healthy living. Then also think of just the issues of crimes and that of gentrification. Once they red zone a particular area, properties values are low. You have gangs and riffraffs roaming the streets. Even if it's your neighborhood, you don't feel safe. By 6 p.m., you want to close the door. You want to lock everything and be in a safe zone. This is the complex nature because in the past, when we talk about health, healthcare, health-seeking behavior, it was very easy to look at just the clinical medical component without factoring the socio-economic component. There was a paper, the Rand experiment of 40 years ago, that formed the template for the current third-party payer system that we have now for the insurance scheme. They found out that if people receive free care versus another cohort in a longitudinal study that had to make some payments, co-pay, the utilization rate of those people making co-pay was less. So the overall outcome were just about the same, except on few cases, like those who were receiving free care had better outcome for their high blood pressure, they were already hypertensive, vision care, and dental. But otherwise, it was more or less the same, the utilization rate. And what did this go to show? I mean, the outcomes were the same, but utilization was less. It means that when people participate, when they pay more from their own pocket or use a third payer, they were likely to go to the hospital less frequently. Which, in another way of calling it, that there will now be a delay in the decision-making process and maximum yield for the third-party payer system, which is the insurance company. And this is one of the reasons right now we have the cost of healthcare is also going up because they are really still trying to push down the utilization rate so that you go fewer attendants at the clinic. And let us look at the Affordable Care Act. I always enjoy this part of the Affordable Care Act because it's very confusing. It is built on cost, quality, and access. And the overall plan was get everybody insured. Everybody pays something to eat. The cost automatically eventually drops down while quality is maintained. But there is a caveat. Because it's a federal law, the undocumented individuals cannot buy insurance. So you are telling us you want everybody to be insured, yet you're already giving a category or class of people that cannot be insured. But these are the same people we cannot wish away. That is why when we had the AB60 in California, people that were undocumented or irregular paperwork, they all have licenses. Because there is no way you can't wish them away. Now they have automobile license and they have insurance. So at least using that as a safety issue, public health issue, safety standard, that is why they have insurance for identification of the individuals. And it has really worked well. Did not encourage anybody to do anything crazy. And we know that they cannot travel with those federal non-compliant ID, but at least we know who the person is. So similarly, now it's for us to work with the policy, and this policy wants to, for everything of both the educational system, the instructional system, and also the patient's rights. At the 7 o'clock news, they start advertising all those medicines. Then they give it a long list of side effects. Then they also include, it has not been approved by FDA. They had that they add that into it. Then the individual picks the phone, and the following day calls the practitioner. Because they've been told, ask for XYZ. If you are suffering from this. So they come and they ask for the XYZ from their practitioner. And when they don't receive it, satisfaction also drops. And if you are not satisfied, it complicates the whole relationship. And what do? You are rewarded with more medication. And it's a case of either will work. One will stick. Let's just throw the old kitchen sink at you. At least one will either stick or crack your head. And that is what we are facing. But for any group of persons or people who have endured this essentially through their lifetime, why should they have a trust in that same system? Why should they go to the hospital if they can avoid it based on their own knowledge? Mm-hmm. So automatically there's a delay in the decision process now. Then the other delay is that they may get there, they may not be treated properly. That's on that delay in that place. They're on that delay to even arrive at the place if you have to wait for public transport or something. Which is why during this pandemic, as we've all seen, one, we are forced to think out of the box. We've been taught to take care to the people. And we're looking at the social component and the social contract. Now, that is that we have Uber, Lyft, and the others now providing transport. If you are going to get your vaccine, they take you there. And if you're a health worker, you are given a certain number of tokens that you can use to go to work as a form of encouragement so that those simple barriers are eliminated. So in our advocacy, in our campaigning, it's for us to know that although this may sound like these are benefits, but they are unintended benefits which we can easily build upon. Because one thing for sure, we're not going back to how we used to be. Things have changed. Juneteenth, July 4, 2 weeks later, mask mandate, like clockwork. And now the Delta variant, and it's getting lower and lower. We have more children getting sick now. Although they say, they are not dying. But you don't want to see a loved one being sick. And if they're under 12, the vaccines have not been cleared for them, although experimentation is going on and further study. So we cannot deal with health in vacuum.
Right.
It has to be with that interplay of policies, politics, economy, and also just this general sociological construct.
Do you think that the country is going to go down on another lockdown?
It's not for. That's a good question. You asked a very good question. And these are the factors. I will flip the question this way. Do you think we opened prematurely?
Yes, we did.
Yes. And do you know why we opened prematurely?
Economics.
Economics, exactly. And the governor was held like this.
Yes, yes.
And the recall is going there. So you have to placate people.
I would add.
Numbers have showed some improvement, true, but not sustainable.
No, not and enough and not sustainable. Yes.
But it was also.
Every epidemiologist would tell you that our numbers are retroactive. So we get the data today, but this was an event that have occurred 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's not real time. You have to analyze. You have to do the permutation and combination. Then you can now say categorically, boom, the numbers are going up or that. But no, we use arbitrary landmark. Like the president made the assumption that by July 4th, we're going to have our independence from the virus, hoping that everybody will receive their shots, will be able to overcome the hesitancy, and we're able to educate people. But alas, we can see that is not what happened. So we're still playing catch up. But as we're playing catch up, we are not the only ones in that game. The virus is also mutating and trying to survive.
But it was also political pressure from the right. It was economics and political pressure, because people on the right were so adamant and people were ready to revolt. Because they were under the impression, well, I don't want to say they were under the impression, they were being fooled into believe this was being forced on them. And so they took a defensive posture. So that was a huge part of it, along with the economics. I think we could have weathered the economic storm, but it was the politics that really set people off.
Yeah, so it will be difficult to categorically predict if there will be a total shutdown again. Because of the multiple competing factors, the politics, and the stakeholders involved. Because, for example, let us go to the southern states and let's start with Florida. Now, the governor is encouraging people to take the vaccine. But remember, this is the same governor that put a law against the wearing of masks and mandatory vaccination. But as you start seeing those body bags piling up, you know, it is spooky. Usually, I've had a few friends within the last 2 weeks. One day they are okay. The following day they are practically hanging by the thread. Their lives. Plus, think of the countless people that will never go to work again. Then now think of it, this other portion. It's always a pandemic. What about all our other pre-existing medical conditions? Are they taking a backseat? What about the woman that needs to do a pap smear or a mammogram? Or the man that needs to monitor the prostatic enzymes? And so on and so and so forth. Or somebody that needs to do the Doppler and the cardio to watch the heart and the heart flow. These are things that unfortunately right now are not being prioritized. So when it will strike, it's going to be beyond collateral damages. Then now think of just people who now are they're just not confident about going to the streets again. They just want to stay at home, especially the seniors. In the church I attend, there are many of them. If they can go back on Zoom or Facebook or whatever, or listen to the radio, that's good enough for them. But asking them to come out to come to church, no, thank you. They are not coming. And this is, it's part of the psychological thing. It's the new normal. They just rather just, you know, they are safe enough. They just want to remain the way they are right now. And as we started the conversation today with Simon Biles, the mental health component, you don't need to run around crazy before we think about the mental health issue. So, Ms. Prince, regarding the mental health issue with your polypharmacy, polymedication, and pre-existing, all your multiple pre-existing conditions, how do you feel? How confident are you, your mental health status?
Now, you know me. They don't. My mental state is pretty much up for grabs. And I say that in the sense to where one minute you can be, I'm okay. The next minute, I'm not okay. With just my situation with my dad, him dying this last month, I'm not okay. I'm not okay with how he was treated. I'm not okay with, you know, I can't see my doctor on a regular basis. I'm not okay with all this in the front of me, constant. I deal with a family member that has real mental issues, who doesn't take medication, who should take medication, but you can't force her to take medication. But once she takes it, she's okay. When she doesn't, she's not okay. And I'm not okay with doctors just administering medication just for the sake of administering medication. You don't know this is working for me. You're not doing blood work to follow up on what I'm taking and what I'm not taking. You don't know my interactions with this drug at the end of the day. What is this really doing to me? Because I can't fully tell you what's going on with me because you're not interacting with me like a doctor to a patient. Talk to me and I talk back. If you don't ask me, how can I give you my feedback? I can't. So, yes, this makes me freaking crazy. Just to think that I have to, someone wants me to take all this stuff. And when I don't take it, guess what they do? We're going to increase your dose. I have so many medications that started at 50 milligrams to 100 milligrams. To 150 milligrams, what? To 200 milligrams. Oh, yeah. Oh, trazodone. Oh, baby. This half of this is trazodone. This is a big old box. Oh, we'll give you some.
There should be a law against that. There should be something somewhere that states that when doctors push medication on a patient, you in this case, when they push medication like that, you have every right to fight back. And they need to be called on the carpet. They need to be called on the carpet so that they don't do that to anyone else.
How about the pharmaceutical companies that allow it to happen too? Like CVS, like Walgreens. When I get a printout, my printout is this thick of my medicine for the year. Why are they okay with it happening?
Yeah, it's really back to what we've talked about before on this network. It's man's inhumanity to man. It's inhumane to do that to someone. It is inhumane. Not only is it inhumane, which is paramount, but it ought to be unethical. It ought to be unethical, and it ought to be the opposite of the hypocritic oath that all doctors take. Because they promise to be there for you, to practice medicine, and to make sure that you live a strong, healthy life. That ain't living a strong, healthy life.
No.
So you should not have $16,000 worth of medication. That's ridiculous. Oh,
I got some pills that cost $900 that have to be delivered to my door that I have to sign for.
And those are the opioids.
No, these ain't opioids. This is just for my stomach. It's a stomach medication. $900-something.
So now if I give you the microphone and you go to the park in Lemert Park and you want to talk to the community, what will you say in 1 minute?
About doctors and medicine or
about
what I'm
anything doing? In your own words.
You have to trust your own body. Because like I said, you know you better than anybody else. My doctor told me, hey, don't do this, don't do this, don't drink, don't do this. One day I went and did everything she told me not to do. When I went back to see her, she said, girl, what is you doing? You looking good. I said, everything you told me not to do. Because like I said, you know you better than anybody else. You know you eat tomato sauce, it's going to get your upset stomach. You know you eat too much red meat, you're going to get constipated. So you know you. So I know that this is not good for me. So guess what? Ruby, don't take it. Y'all can prescribe it all y'all want to. But I'm not swallowing all that every day. So just because a doctor gives it to you doesn't mean that they know you and they know the right thing for you. Know you.
So why did you take the vaccine?
I took the vaccine because, first of all, I have underlying medical issues. And as you know, I was around somebody who had tuberculosis, which put me on some medication for 9 months. After that, I ended up having pneumonia. Then I ended up having restrictive lung disease. So my lungs are bad already. So I need to be able to breathe. And I know that COVID, you can't breathe. I've had COVID twice. So I don't want it a third time. So I took the vaccine for my own safety and for the safety of anybody that I'm around. Because I want to say one thing about them opening this up real quick, because they opened it up for financial gain, right? And then all of a sudden Biden was like, let's send these vaccines to these third world countries. I don't want to say third world, but you know, other countries where they didn't have adequate health care, because that's where all the rich people want to go and visit. I've been locked in the house too long. I got to go to Cancun. I got to go to whoever and wherever. So let's hurry up and vaccinate the people in Brazil, in Belize, because that's where all these people want to go so that they don't get sick when they get over there. But you got the people over here who weren't vaccinated. They go over there and give it to the people over there. Then I go visit who I may have not taken the vaccine or may have taken it, and I'm going to come back home with another variant of this COVID, because my neighbor next door went over there last month and everything was all fine and now I got it.
Oh, God.
So, no.
Oh, my God.
I think if you have the vaccine, it should be the telltale sign we had back in the day that showed up on your left shoulder to prove that you got that vaccine. Don't show me no card, because when I was a kid, I'm not showing you no card. You saw my arm.
But you see, anything that involves the word mandate in the U.S., you know we are against it. So once you say mandate, it's a bad word. And that is why when we're talking about vaccine passports, it sounds like a bad word with Uncle Sam reaching out. But now you really can just use your phone number, your first name, your last name, and date of birth, and we can pull out your immunization record from any device online. So the vaccine passport has actually come in now. All you need to do is book an airline ticket and they can check if you've received your shot. So not even without telling you or asking you, because when you booked your ticket, you provided all the information. So there are subtle ways to go around this, but I've absolutely enjoyed this conversation. And as we said, in your own world, but it's slightly different to hear from the other people from the other side, from the consumers of our services, so that we can learn the best way to better improve in the services we are rendering to the community, especially as we continue to tackle the issues of disparities and lack of equity in the system. Yolanda.
Thank you, Dr. Orke. Thank you so much. There is so much to talk about in this regard, and you and Ruby have done a fantastic job of that. We've got to keep this going. Ruby, I will be giving you Dr. Zarif's information And thank you so much for being with us. And I pray for you every day. I pray for your recovery because you can be healthy, whole, healed, and strong. Thank you so much, everyone. And thank you very much, Dr. Orque. Thank you for being with us here on In Your Own Words. It's always good to hear you and always good to hear what you have to tell us. Thank you so much. You educate us so well. Have a good night, everyone. This is Intentional Talk Radio Network, ITRNradio.com. Be sure to join us tomorrow for another show right here on ITRN with T.J. Lofton. And he will be here to talk about education. He will also be talking about real estate. We have started the series, It's Time to Tell the Truth, and he is in there to tell the truth. So tomorrow, right here, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Central Time, and 8 p.m. on the East Coast. Be sure to join us on any of your podcast platforms. We will be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Don't forget, right here on Intentional Talk Radio. Have a good evening, all, and thank you very much, Ruby Prince. Thank you, Dr. Orque. Have a good evening, everyone. Stay safe and wear your mask.